Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm thrilled to be here with all of you today, the week before Christmas. It's really happening. Every year, as Christmas gets closer, I just can't believe it's been a whole year. And it has been. The holidays are here full-blown this year, and I know we're all running around with crazy schedules. But I'm here to remind us to all breathe through all of this. This week, on Tuesday, was my 24th year cooking up a Christmas feast for those that are hungry in Rufus King Park in Jamaica, Queens. And I do that with the help of my community. I could not do it without so many volunteers. I did it for Thanksgiving, and thank God the menu for the Christmas feast is much simpler. We're basically doing baked ziti, Caesar salad, garlic bread. We make an apple cobbler and brownies, and someone donates pecan pies. So there's lots of delicious food, but it's much, much simpler, and that's a good thing because sometimes coming down from the Thanksgiving event takes weeks. So I'm just starting to feel normal when it's time to gear up for Christmas. But I had so many wonderful, wonderful people and groups coming through for Christmas, and I just wanted to give a big shout out to one organization that has been working with me for this is their fourth year now. They're called the Worldwide Psychos, and they are just a wonderful, wonderful organization. And I wrote about them this week in my blog because they started about 5 years ago. The founder of the Worldwide Psychos actually happened to volunteer here the year before, and he loved it so much, and he just felt so good volunteering and doing something outside of his norm that he decided to start this organization to get his friends, who all have so much time to hang out in the winter, especially in the summer. You know, they live out on the east end of the island. In the summer, there's lots to do. But in the winter, they have a lot of time on their hands. And so he decided to start this organization and get his friends and young people that are out there to really start volunteering. And he started this organization, and then unfortunately, he had a very bad car accident. Actually, he was a passenger in the front seat and passed away. And in his memory, his friends have really rallied around this organization that he started and show up for so many wonderful opportunities to giving back to the community. And I happen to be the recipient of their efforts when it comes to Thanksgiving and Christmas. And it's just wonderful to be working with them, getting to know these young people really well. And I've watched them grow and their commitment to coming here and showing up. Of course, it gets easier and easier every year the more that they know, so that they really know what's expected of them, what to do, and they just have such great, great spirit. And it's just been such a pleasure to get to know these young people and to work with them, and it's been a real honor. So check out my blog this week on iegreen.com and learn more about the Worldwide Psychos. They're just really, really a wonderful group. Lots of things going on, of course. You know, the farm bill is still being ironed out. And, while there's lots of wonderful things in this supposedly bipartisan compromise farm bill, they did not cut the SNAP benefits, which is a good thing, and they're looking at legalizing hemp farming. But there's still some real problems in the weakening of the organic standards. And those of us that care about the purity of organics as being our one safety net to transparency in our foods really have a problem with this, because they are slowly allowing more and more synthetic ingredients into what we call organic. And those of us that really care about organic don't agree that those things should be allowed. So it's still being ironed out. There's petitions on my website that you can sign to send to your congressmen and representatives. And, one thing that I've learned with this current administration is that it's up to all of us to really get involved, to take these issues really seriously, and to do what we can, whether it's signing petitions, calling our senators, calling our governors, but really, you know, banding together with others. And, you know, I was asking a friend of mine who is very politically involved, how does she keep from getting depressed? Because it's so easy with so many issues at stake right now to not feel overwhelmed and get depressed. And she said, by actually doing things, by joining together with others that are also fighting to make our world safer and cleaner, you don't feel like you're helpless. You actually feel like you're empowered, and you are empowered, and you are actually making a difference. And by doing that, you're not like a sitting duck. You're really becoming active, and you're with other people with like mind, and it's energizing. And so it's really the opposite of feeling helpless and depressed. You actually feel empowered and enlivened. And so I encourage all of us to participate in things that we feel passionate about. And, you know, everybody's passionate about something. Even if, you know, I throw this out as an example, if golf is your thing, there's ways of giving back and helping people that don't have opportunities to play golf learn how to play golf. I know that's really, you know, for many of us really fighting for organic or healthy eating, that seems like a frivolous thing. But if that's all that someone's passionate about, even in that, you can give, you can find a way to give back. There's so many people that don't have the same opportunities as others, and we're trying to equalize the playing field, trying to give back where we can, and that's one of the things that the Worldwide Psychos is doing, and it's just so wonderful. My guest, who's going to be coming on in just a little bit, is going to be Allison Mears-Cohen, and she is the Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization that I'm going to tell you about some more in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on that you definitely want to participate in, and, of course, my weekly recipe. If you're in the Long Island, New York area, on January 8th, there is a Healthier Long Island Challenge happening. It's a Growing Healthier Students. And Stephen Ritz, who has been a keynote speaker at one of the Long Island food conferences in the past, he will be the keynote speaker at this event. And this event's free. It's from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Actually, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And it will be taking place out on Long Island. And you can find a link to that on my website, or you can just Google Healthier Long Island Challenge 7, V11, 7 spelled like that, Growing Healthier Students, and it should be a really wonderful event. On January 18th and 19th, that weekend is the annual NOFA Winter Conference, and again, that is going to be a wonderful event, it always is, and farmers that are being honored this year are actually right here from Long Island, Fred and Karen Lee from Sang Lee Farms, and they will be being honored. And the keynote speaker is Leah Penniman, and she's the co-director and program manager of Soulfire Farm. I've interviewed them on my radio show, too, and they're a farm really taking up social issues as well as food issues up near Albany, and they're doing a great job at that. So she will be the keynote speaker there. So come out if you can. Unfortunately, the NOFA Winter Conference conflicts with the Women's March, which is going to be really big this year. That's on January 19th. It's taking place in Washington, D.C., and there's sister marches around the country. There will be a big one in New York City as well. So depending on where you are, try to find a women's march near you and join the women's march. As women, we have power, and we need to come together, and we need to really change the course of history here. And we can do it. And again, mobilizing and taking action and taking to the streets is one way of doing it. So find a march and join in. My recipe this week is Caesar salad. You know, I know it has anchovies, and most of the recipes I share with everybody are vegan, but I will tell you how you can make the Caesar salad dressing also vegan if you don't want to use the anchovies. But I was making so much Caesar salad for this Christmas event for the people in need, and it was just so delicious, and so many people were asking me for the recipe, so I decided to share that with you. So you're going to start with one large head of romaine lettuce chopped up, and I do chop it with a knife. You can break it if you prefer that. 2 cloves of garlic, 4 anchovy fillets, that's from the can, just 4 little fillets, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 2 lemons juiced, 1 tablespoon of chopped parsley, half a cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1/4 cup of Parmesan cheese, and then croutons, whether you use gluten-free croutons or regular croutons, and fresh black pepper. So you're going to cut, wash, and spin the lettuce in a spinner, or however you really get it dry. You really want the lettuce to be dry. And in a food processor, you're going to pulse the anchovies and the garlic together. Add the lemon juice, mustard, and parsley, and pulse some more. And then with the food processor running, add the olive oil in a drizzle through the opening in the top. And that's going to help emulsify the salad dressing and make it really thick. And then you're going to add the Parmesan cheese and the black pepper at the end. And then you can taste it for spices, whether you want to add a little bit more garlic. I like it garlicky, so I tend to add a little bit extra chopped garlic at the end and some more parsley. But that's up to you. And then you're just going to, right before eating the salad, you're going to toss it with the dressing, serve it with the croutons, and put some fresh grated Parmesan cheese on top. And if you want to make this dish vegan, instead of anchovies, I use capers. Capers are also really salty, have a little bit of a pickled flavor. So you can use like a tablespoon of capers and use that instead of the anchovies, and it will also come out really, really delicious. So give that a try, and of course, let me know how you like it. I love hearing feedback from everybody. And now it is my pleasure to introduce my guest, Allison Mears Cohen, Senior Director of Programs for Why Hunger, which is a nonprofit organization supporting grassroots organizations that are implementing innovative community-based solutions to hunger and poverty and participating in building that movement. And Allison's responsibilities include helping to develop and steward Why Hunger's organizational vision and strategy and its implementation through its grassroots action network, which is called Nourish Network for the Right to Food and Global Movements Program. And prior to joining Why Hunger, Allison served as the Northern Program Manager for the Heifer International organization, and she was there from 2001 to 2008. She was responsible for developing partnerships throughout the Northeast and Midwest regions with local communities and like-minded organizations to build sustainable food systems where limited resource families, communities, and beginner farmers, both rural and urban, have access to healthy food and income-earning opportunities. And prior to transferring to New York, Allison served as the director of Heifer and International's first urban agricultural program based in Chicago, Illinois, and she was there for 5 years. And for the past 25 years, she's worked with farmers and communities in West Africa, Latin America, the Caribbean, Canada, and the United States. And now she's living in Brooklyn with her husband and 2 daughters. And Allison, are you with me?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining me, taking the time in your busy schedule.
No worries. Glad to be here.
Thank you. I thought you could start by first just telling everybody a little bit more about the organization Why Hunger.
Sure.
And its mission.
Yeah, Why Hunger is an organization that has been around since 1975. It's an organization that originally was started by the singer-songwriter Harry Chapin and, at the time, the rock and roll DJ and Catholic priest Bill Ayers. So very interesting, auspicious beginning. And from day one, they were very concerned and very interested in working at the root causes of poverty, and that's kind of remained the thread throughout the organization these 40 some years later. We are a...
You know, I didn't even realize that it was also founded by Harry Chapin. You know, the Long Island Cares is as well.
Exactly.
Long Island.
Yep, Long and Why Hunger was a part of founding Long Island Cares alongside Harry all those years ago.
Wonderful. You know, we still work with Sandy, his wife.
Oh, great.
One of the organizers with me in the Long Island Food Conference that we just had last month.
Oh,
so,
great.
Small world.
Yeah, very small world, isn't it?
Okay,
yeah.
Continue.
So Why Hunger is a grassroots support organization, which is, we've sort of play what I think is a fairly unique function in that we're a small organization and we stay lean and mean intentionally because we believe that the experts are the grassroots organizations that are living this reality every day and that are on the front lines designing and implementing and innovating all kinds of different solutions to the issues of hunger and poverty that they're facing in their own communities. And so our role is to support that work as well as to knit it together, sort of these individual efforts that are happening around the world, to knit them together into alliances and networks and ultimately working towards a global social movement that is calling for food sovereignty, for the rights of folks to determine their own food systems.
Yeah, well, you know, so often I think that, you know, if there was a way that we could get all of these small, wonderful grassroots organizations to work together under one umbrella, we'd gain so much more momentum.
Yeah, and so, that's part of our theory of change, too, is that we first of all, we believe that it's going to take a social movement, really a large, broad-based social movement that's led by those who are working on the front lines and experiencing hunger and poverty themselves as leaders in this movement. And that is ultimately what is going to enable us to end hunger because we could do it. We could do it. It's a political decision not to to end hunger and poverty in this country and around the world. And so we need to build a strong civil society that can that can respond to that and can hold the decision makers accountable for those political decisions that they're making, as well as designing and kind of living our way into the society that we want to create and the world that we want to live in. So it's a both and. It's kind of a resisting and building at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Can you touch on that a little bit more? When you say that it's a political decision, can you explain to my listeners a little bit more what you mean by that?
About the political decision?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, if it would be that easy to end it, it's a political decision. Why do you think people are making that political decision to keep people hungry?
Yeah, I think that's a really that's a very complex conversation that we could probably spend many years talking about, and I think ultimately that it is about it's about our an underlying system of values of priorities of. We're living now in a world where there is such a tremendous gap between those who are living in the top 3% economically and those that aren't. And as that divide gets larger and larger and larger, the reasons for that divide become more exposed. And so we could say, well, you know, capitalism is the culprit, or various economic policies is the culprit, and I think that it is ultimately tied up in what we value as as a larger society, and that can be very daunting to change. I mean, I think there's many reasons why it continues. I think that there's institutionalized racism. There's issues of gender inequity that are also institutionalized, and ultimately economic justice. And economic justice is something that that would work for the majority of us, but not necessarily those that are currently in power.
Mm-hmm. And so how is Why Hunger working to connect those different independent grassroots organizations and to end hunger and poverty?
Yeah, so we work with several different alliances and networks that we've helped to initiate and that are we're continuing to steward. So one is called the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance, and the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance began about 8 years ago, and it is now a national network that is connected to the global movement La Via Campesina. So it's very much a grassroots-led network and alliance. It's not a nonprofit. It's an alliance of organizations and of small farmers and farm workers that that have come together to build power, essentially, to create a to amplify voices, to create a larger voice in this in the cacophony that we have currently in our society. So they're coming together to talk about food sovereignty, to help change the narrative on what are the true and false solutions to hunger, at the same time that they're implementing different strategies in various communities around the U.S. To begin to identify, adopt, and live into a different kind of world where the food system is determined by those locally. And this takes on the form of many things. We are working very closely with something called the People's Agroecology Process. And agroecology is
Can you say that again? People's what?
People's Agroecology Process. And agroecology is a form of food production, but it goes beyond that. It's not just a form of food production. It is also it's a form of food production that works very closely with the local ecology, and to both use the local ecology to grow food organically, and it is an organizing strategy. So it's a way that communities, it's the way in which the knowledge is spread. And so it's a community-to-community, farmer-to-farmer process of learning and changing the food system together. So there's both a food production element to it, but there's also very much an organizing aspect to it as well. And so the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance is really spearheading that, and as well as talking about issues of access to land and cooperative forms of cooperative farming and cooperative marketing, and really beginning to develop the sense of the collective and how we build community together and how we engage in the various kinds of discussions and debates that that help us really build and breed and secure democracy in a peaceful society.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you just said democracy, because what I kept thinking about in when I mentioned, what kind of umbrella can we all be under? Francis Moore Lappe was our keynote speaker at the Long Island Food Conference that we had last month, and she was talking about democracy as being that umbrella and that we all really have to work towards building a true social democracy, because that's one thing that all these grassroots organizations that we care about could go under that umbrella, because whether you're talking about organics or you're talking about poverty, hunger, whatever your independent nonprofit is, whatever that spin is, it could go under that umbrella. And it was pretty great how she tied them all together with that.
I believe that very strongly, and I think that part of what's prevented us from really building this larger movement is that we do tend to stay in our silos, right? So folks that are concerned about housing are you know, connected and working diligently on that. Those that are concerned about organics or food systems, we band together and we're working on that. Those that are concerned about racism and racial justice, that's a different camp. And in fact, we all live at the intersection of all of these issues, and we all value, at least conceptually, we value democracy. And that is, as Francis Moore Lopez says, could be the common thread that really helps us weave this together, this larger social movement. Yep, I agree with that.
Right. And so Why Hunger does not have their own projects, really. You fund other nonprofit or profit organizations working for other social changes. Can you talk a little bit about which global social movements you actually do work with?
Yes, so we work with three global social movements, La Via Campesina, which is the largest global social movement one of the longest running. It works in more than 70 countries around the world and has millions and millions of small farmers that are members of La Via Campesina. They're a social movement for food sovereignty. We also work with the World March of Women, which is also a robust social movement that started in the 90s, actually in Canada, but is now spread all around the world and is currently their secretariat is in Mozambique. And we work with the World Forum of Fisher People. These are all three global movements that are global social movements that are led by farmers themselves, by fisher people themselves, by women, by those who are most impacted by the social issues that they're working on. So we build relationships and have built relationships with these social movements, and then we work with them, and they lead us in identifying where our support could be the most beneficial to the strengthening and building of their social movement. And so funding is a very small piece of what we do, is provide funding. We also work to leverage funding. We're also working on projects and processes of narrative change, so really trying to debunk the mainstream narrative that charity is what's going to actually end hunger, and instead hoping to spread the message that it's ultimately about social justice. It's ultimately about a human rights framework, and that is the narrative that we'd like to spread. So we offer a whole range of support services that are very much rooted in the relationships that we have with these social movements and with grassroots organizations here in the United States.
Uh-huh. I'm sure you're familiar with Andy Fisher's book, The Big Hunger.
Yep. He's a good friend and colleague. Yes.
I found when I interviewed him and read that book, I found it really fascinating to start looking at charity because, as you heard at the beginning, I am working with a food pantry that, helps to get food to those that are in need, but they're very clear on the fact that this is just a Band-Aid. It is not what's going to fix the problem. And their focus, this food pantry, unlike so many, they're really trying to help get the young kids into school and into colleges. And, their whole take is, education is the key to breaking the cycle of poverty. Do you guys work with that topic at all, with trying to get the young people into college or staying in college?
No, we actually don't work directly on that issue. We do, however, work with food pantries and food banks around the country that are wrestling with this contradiction of, we're feeding people every day because there's the need to do it, and we want to have an exit strategy. We don't. We want this to be temporary, but yet we've got 50 years of food banking under our belt in this country, and they and some significant funding in bricks and mortar, right, that have built more than 200 food large, very large food banks and distribution centers around this country. And so there's these this contradiction of how do we deal with the food insecurity that exists in this country? How do we feed people now at the same time that we're trying to end the line? So how do we feed the line and end the line at the same time? And that's an issue that we're very much engaged in with organizations around the country, and we've been working with them to develop a national network, again, another sort of alliance of some of these really progressive food banks and food pantry food access organizations that are saying, you know, we need to really challenge this narrative that charity is, you know, is the answer. And we need to really, if we keep defining the problem as hunger, then providing food is always going to be the solution. And in fact, the problem isn't hunger so much as it is inequities in the systems and institutions and policies that that we've built and that we've sanctioned in this country and that has an impact around the world. So that's been a really interesting process, and we're in our seventh year of that, and we are working with more than 200 food banks and food pantries around the country that have that have come into this umbrella to say, yes, we need to change the way that we're doing things. We need to continue to make sure that people are fed today at the same time that we're trying, we want to dismantle this system. We want to get rid of the need for food charity. So that's a really interesting.
And it wasn't always that way, was it? I mean, this the rise in food charity really seems to be more of a recent change.
Yeah, it's about 50 years old, actually. So the origins of food banks in this country is in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And, you know, it was really meant to be a temporary solution that as sort of our government began to shift and become a little bit more conservative and sort of to really walk the talk of the neoliberal agenda, then the government more and more sort of gave over what should be their role, which is to protect the most vulnerable. They very, very quickly let it go to the private nonprofit sector. And that is, I think, when it became impossible to kind of resist the putting down the bricks and mortar, right? So, and food banking continues to proliferate. And if you look at Feeding America, for instance, and a lot of their messaging and a lot of what they talk about is the number of people they're feeding and the pounds of food that they're distributing, among other things, to be fair. But those are still two of their biggest ways of talking about their success. And that's kind of counterintuitive, right, when you think about it, that we're feeding more people and we're giving out more pounds of food. And that is the measure of success, as opposed to the need is decreasing. Every year we're seeing the need decreasing because of the work that our organization is doing. And I think that's the kind of exit strategies that are it's going to be important for food access organizations to embrace in order for us to reverse this 50-year trend of charitable food distribution.
Mm-hmm. You know, and also I just want to state that, you know, the charitable food, the food that is mostly being given out, is the surplus food and donations from these big food corporations, which is really the junkiest, most food processed food, unhealthiest food possible, going to these communities that are really struggling with obesity and diabetes and high cholesterol and, you know, just horrible diseases that are completely connected to the food they are eating.
Yeah, and that's true. And I think there's been a trend maybe in the last decade as we've become more aware of the link between diet and disease, that there certainly has been a trend, and I've seen many, many food banks and food pantries across the country begin to distribute fresh food and work directly with farmers. I still think those are not the vast majority, but that is beginning. And relationships between or partnerships between local food banks and community-based health centers, for instance, and the idea of prescription veggies, where a doctor can basically prescribe that a patient needs to be get access to more fresh fruits and vegetables, and so there are food banks and food access organizations and projects that are responding to that and taking those veggie prescriptions, for lack of a better word, as a way to provide and create a rationale for providing more accessing and providing more fresh fruits and vegetables. So it is, you know, it's sort of living. It's this contradiction that we're living with. We've got more than 60,000 emergency food providers, food banks, food pantries, soup kitchens in the U.S. And yet we still have 12% of Americans that are food insecure. And that's the reality we're living with. And the more I think what we've been able to demonstrate is that food banking, because it just keeps growing, and we've seen very little variation in the percentage of the population that's food secure over the last 30 years. And so I think we can probably say that, in fact, the more food banks you have, that is not going to ultimately decrease the number of people that need food. And so there's got to be a different answer. And I think that answer is to shift the moral responsibility for the social safety net back to the government, and to really hold our government accountable for taking care of those who are the most vulnerable. And I think that isn't just about increasing SNAP. I think it's also about creating a minimum wage that is a living wage. I think that it is ultimately about creating a society where everyone has the opportunity to provide for their families in a dignified way. And we know that more than 50% of the folks that are using SNAP, for instance, the food stamps, supplemental nutrition assistance program, have at least one full-time working adult in their household, and still need to access food stamps to feed their families.
Sure. And that's another dialogue narrative that has to change. That people who are using the SNAP program are lazy and don't work and whatever, and that's just so wrong. That's why it goes hand in hand with the whole minimum wage thing, because so many of them are working not only one full-time job, two full-time jobs, three full-time jobs. I mean, just to, you know, cover their families. So,
right.
It's really hard. Let's take just a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the exit strategy concept, because I think that's new and one I haven't really talked about much. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Allison Cohen from Why Hunger. Be right back.
I'm Gary Knoll, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of Progressive Radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to PRN.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm talking with my guest, Allison Mears-Cohen from Why Hunger, about hunger in this country and the world, and the current narrative of that there's not enough food and that we have to help feed them, and actually how Why Hunger is working to change that narrative. So, Allison, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So let's talk about how Why Hunger is trying to change that narrative and what you mean when you say exit strategy for food banks.
Right. So an exit strategy for a food bank would mean that the organization has a strategy and a plan for how they can put themselves out of business, how they can then help get to a world where they're no longer needed. And that's by and large, I think the reverse has been happening. There's been a certain amount of permanence that has developed around the sector of food banking and the process of food access and distribution in this country. And that's what we've seen over the last 50 years. That there is the need continues, which is kind of counter to what many of these organizations, their mission is to end hunger, and ending hunger is something that can't be done just by the private sector. So what are the ways in which these organizations are also engaging in advocacy? In what ways are they working with and developing partnerships with other organizations and movements that are fighting for a living wage, that are fighting, in the fight for 15, those that are, in what ways are they working at the intersection of the many different issues that define a person's life, whether they're in crisis or not. So there are examples of organizations that are beginning to do that and beginning to really make some inroads in their own communities, their own cities and regions. And an example of one is an organization called Neighbors Together that is in Brooklyn. And they're a soup kitchen. And they've been around for about 30 years now, I think. And, 35 years. And they began to, in speaking with the people that they were seeing come to the soup kitchen day after day after day, learned that in fact issues of housing was what was really at the core of their crisis. And so they became, long story short, they became engaged in organizing the folks that were coming in, the guests at their soup kitchen, and were able to get some significant, make some significant inroads into changing laws and policies here in New York City that would um, that would challenge landlords that were taking advantage of folks that were coming out of treatment and into some kind of transitional housing. And they were very successful. And the idea that this is a soup kitchen that is putting time, resources, and an emphasis on working at the intersection of hunger, health, and housing is an example, I think, that we should lift up, that the role of community organizing at the local level helps us underscore that hunger is really about poverty. And that is really a failure of policy systems and governments to serve everyone. Kind of continues to underscore that hunger can't be ended just by creating access to food. And I think that that the more these organizations and institutions and broadly citizens acknowledge that hunger exists at the intersection of many social problems is a critical first step and is a way to begin to envision what that exit strategy might be.
Mm-hmm. So when they're talking about exit strategies, I mean, if food banks stop providing food for people, what is the alternative? I mean, where will they be getting food from if, the transition takes time for poverty to end. So in the meantime, how would that work?
Right. So I'm certainly not suggesting that that food banks close their doors tomorrow. Or even in the next 2 years, but that they begin to envision, and I think this is where the concept of coming together collectively with not just your own organization, but working with other organizations to begin to identify and come to an agreement, or not an agreement, but a shared analysis of why there's hunger, and how and what's the way in which change can happen, and then implementing that within their own communities and adapting it to their own circumstances. But I think it by and large means that we need to see food banks advocating for a living wage, and we need to see food banks advocating for changing systems, policies, and institutions that are continuing to create a gap. Continue to widening the gap between the rich and the poor. And I think that that should be a part of the exit strategy. So it's really about the strategy, and it's really about shifting some of the resources and some of the programmatic efforts and strategies towards organizing and advocacy.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, can you imagine if all the people that benefit from food banks were able to be organized? I mean, so many of them are disenfranchised and they don't have the power or the ability to know where to start to advocate for themselves. So if food banks became that advocating role, took on that role to organize, the thousands and thousands of families that take advantage of their resources towards working towards living wage, better housing, good jobs, that could really help make the change, because there's the power of numbers, the people power that we talk about. And
it is. It is ultimately about building power. And so I think that this is, we can go back to Andy's book to help sort of look at what some of the big barriers are to getting food banks to move in that direction. And part of it is who sits on their boards of directors and who where do they get their funding, right? And Feeding America, which is the network of food banks in this country and the largest anti-hunger organization in this country, so much of their funding, majority of their funding, as Andy points out in his book, comes from some of the big food and big ag corporations that are, in fact, contributing to the persistence of hunger and poverty in this country. And so that that also should be confronted and exposed and perhaps changed. And that's an enormous barrier. And more food banks they've become very, very efficient at acquiring and distributing food and see that as their particular role. And while I think that's absolutely critical and it's important, I think the way in which it's done is also important. And I think that if we are going to do that in a way that is dignified, that it does mean engaging with and organizing the folks that are benefiting from the food bank, engaging them in conversations, learning about what the reality of their lives is like and how they can build power with others to confront some of those systems and barriers that are preventing them from moving out of poverty.
Mm-hmm. And so is Why Hunger working towards training these food banks how to organize the people? Or, you know, how's Why Hunger working into that?
Yeah, yes, in part, we're doing that. So, well, we don't do it alone. We're working with, we're working right now with about 10 other food access organizations, some that are very community-focused, some that are more state-focused, and this is the group we've been working with over the last 7 to 8 years to build this national alliance of food access organizations that want to see a shift from charity to justice in their own operations. And so together, we're learning together about what those different mechanisms are, what are the different levers that can be pulled in order to create a shift in what their organizations are doing, in their strategies and programs, such that they begin to work on organizing folks at the intersection of the different social issues that they're facing. So, yes, we are working in partnership with others to really begin to reimagine and change the nature in which food banks are working in this country.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about at the beginning of the show, the U.S. Food Sovereignty Alliance that you work with. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really talk about the Closing the Hunger Gap Alliance that you work with. Can you just touch on that a little bit before we're just about out of time, but I would love to just know what they do.
Yeah, and that's the group I was referring to just a minute ago. Is the Closing the Hunger Gap is the alliance of food access organizations that are calling for a reframing of how we deal with the issue of hunger in this country from charity to justice.
Okay, great. Well, this has been amazing. The work you're doing and the angle that you're taking is so needed, and it's really so wonderful to know that you are out there doing this because, like I said, I've been working for 24 years with the River Fund Food Pantry, and they're wonderful, and they know that poverty is the root of the problem, and they're really working with the families that come through there that they really get to know to try to help their young people get into college and stay in college. So they actually help fund the gap money, the money for the books and for the food and to help with the rent so that they don't have to drop out and help their families. Because that's such an issue, you know, when we have, like, the governor saying that, you know, anyone making $100,000 or less can go to college for free, but it doesn't cover the books and the food and, you know,
that's right.
Kids are still dropping out because they can't make ends meet. So the River Fund Food Pantry actually provides grants to help the kids with that. But I have been working with them for 24 years, and I see the same families grow up, and then the children that they came with are now parents, and they come with their children. And, you know, I've been there long enough to see the next generation coming through the system, and the change is not happening quick enough, is all I can say from my perspective. I mean, the people are lovely, and, you know, I've gotten to know them, and you know, I don't know all their stories, obviously, but I know that more needs to be done to really just really shift the paradigm so they're not still coming through generation after generation.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so thank you, Allison, for joining me. It's been really wonderful. And everyone out there, thank you for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Queen on the Progressive Radio Network, and I've been talking with Allison Cohen from Why Hunger. And Why Hunger's website is whyhunger.org, correct?
That's correct. Thank you so much, Bhavani.
Okay. You're welcome. Everyone, check them out, whyhunger.org. See you all. I won't be with you next week because of holiday, but I'll see you on January 3rd. Have a great holiday. Bye, everyone.